bulk of Matthew 19 for today, just to talk about mostly marriage and divorce. And so that would lend more discussion. Marriage and divorce is hard to make an invitation out of the marriage and divorce thing. I think it'd take me a little bit too long to make that connection to bring an invitation. So I thought I'd stick with the rich young ruler to do that lesson. So let's go ahead and dive into the text. Could I get somebody to read, volunteer to read the first 10 verses of Matthew 19, please? Somebody have that handy? Greg, thank you.
When Jesus had finished these words, he departed from Galilee and came into the region of Judea beyond the Jordan. Large crowds followed him, and he healed them there. Some Pharisees came to Jesus, testing him and asking, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason at all?" And he answered and said, "Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female, and said, 'For this reason,
yes. And just to get a bigger picture, let's go over to Mark chapter 10 and read the parallel passage here, because there is a little bit different rendering here. Matthew includes a little bit more of the discussion, if we'll notice. So Mark chapter 10 and the first 12 verses, please. Verses 1 through 12. Can you get another volunteer? John, thank you. Yes, please.
He entered not that place, went into the region of Judea about the fourth, and gave crowds, and people came to him. And as was his custom, he taught them. Some Pharisees came and tested him by asking, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife?" "What did Moses command you?" he replied. They said, "Moses permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and send her away." "It's because of your hearts were hard and Moses wrote in this law," he replied. "But at the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. For this reason,
so we can see that the two accounts here by Matthew and Mark are just, there's a little bit of difference between how it's worded and how the sequence goes in the discussion between Jesus and the Pharisees. So I just wanted to read that and kind of see those two differences. What are some of those differences that we see? Just slight, I mean, it's very slight wording. You'll notice. How about the question that they ask Jesus? Is that different between Matthew and Mark? A little bit? What does it say in Matthew?
For any reason.
They're kind of trying to nail him down a little bit more in Matthew, it seems, for just any reason. How does it render it in Mark 10? Yeah, so it almost seems like they're asking him, is it just lawful at all to divorce your wife at all? But I think the point that we should take away is, why are they asking him? Because the two counts are identical in that regard. Why are they asking him this question? What's their reasoning? They're testing him, right? Why are they testing him? Yeah, to find out if there's any contradiction between him and Moses. Could there be any other reasons that they might be testing him, trying to get him to take a side on a certain issue? Anything else?
He'd already spoken publicly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyone else?
The other thing is, I think, just like the
took him up and were trying to get him, as I mentioned, in the conversation, and he took him over and trying to challenge his credibility. And then in doing so, if they can discredit him, then it helps him with their own.
Because why would you? I'm sorry. Right. And obviously, if they're trying to get him to take a side on an issue, then there's already two sides to the issue that are going on among the Jews. There's a side that believes one thing, and there's a side that believes another. So they're trying to get Jesus to take one of those roads. Either you're going to take this road of this stance on marriage and divorce and what that means, or you're going to take this side. So they're trying to get him to pick one of those sides. What are some of the other differences in how this is worded here between Mark 10 and Matthew 19? Anything else that we notice?
So in Matthew 19, mm-hmm. It says they asked him, why did Moses command us to do this? And Jesus, in Mark 10, Jesus asked him the question, did Moses allow the command to?
Yeah, and that is an interesting difference between the two accounts, is in case you couldn't hear Andrew. In Matthew 19, the Pharisees ask him, why did Moses command us to do this? And then Mark chapter 10, Jesus asks them, what did Moses command you? Doesn't mean that the two passages are contradicting each other. It's just kind of what part of the account is given in different parts of the story. And then the answer as well that's given by the Pharisees is a little different, is it not? Where do we see that? Matthew 19, what is there? Or Jesus' answer there, even in Matthew 19, to their statement, you know, he says, they say, why did Moses command? And then he uses the word what, that Moses permitted. And it's kind of the opposite a little bit in Mark chapter 10, is it not? He asked them, what did Moses command you? And they say, Moses permitted a man to write a certificate of divorce and to dismiss her. Anything else that we notice? Just little differences? Just so we know what we're discussing when we start discussing this. Because when we start discussing this and we start using words command and permit and different things, we need to be able to go back to which account are we talking about, so we stay straight on our discussion. Anything else that we notice on differences or similarities even? And in both accounts, the Pharisees are the ones kind of twisting the word to kind of catch him in his stance. But it's just they're almost a little bit different in how that's recorded is all. But it's still the same thing. They're testing him, and that's the point I'm trying to hopefully get across, is that the story that we're seeing here is that the Pharisees are trying to catch Jesus in a trap. And we're going to see that his answer ultimately is the same in both accounts. So even though there's a little bit of difference in wording, the answer to the question is the same in both accounts, I believe. All right, so let's dive into some of the questions that I sent out then about these accounts. So we already discussed why do they ask him? They're asking him to test him. What is Jesus' answer? What does he quote to them as his answer? Okay, so that's it. That's his first answer to the question: is what did Moses say? Well, this is in Mark 10, correct? That he says this. So what did Moses say? Command. There we go. All right, and where do they go for that? What do the Pharisees give as their their answer here.
Yeah, Deuteronomy 24, the first two verses of that, correct? Let's go there and read that.
Because they do a pretty good job, don't you think, of twisting their words around to try and catch Jesus in his stance here. They do a pretty commendable job of trying to catch him, but the problem is that, well, they're trying to test Jesus. Right, so Deuteronomy 24, 1 through 2. Can I get somebody to read those two verses, please? Hayden, do you have that? Okay, so I guess just the first verse actually kind of gets us to answer what we're looking at. All right, so are there any differences between what the Pharisees say and what is actually written in Deuteronomy chapter 24? Because what's their question in Matthew 19? What is their question? Can a man divorce his wife for any reason? Is the way that Matthew records that. Can a man divorce his wife for any reason? And if they were to go back, if they were to answer the question that is recorded in Mark chapter 10, what does Moses command you? Then what did Moses command in Deuteronomy 24? What was the reasoning for giving a certificate to push your wife away that Moses gives in Deuteronomy chapter 24?
Uncleanness. Okay.
So, if they're answering Jesus' question in Mark chapter 10. If you take both accounts and kind of mix them a little bit here, what did Moses command? What was the answer to their question in Matthew chapter 19? Can a man divorce his wife for any reason? No. And they knew that. What was recorded in Deuteronomy chapter 24, 1 through 2, was Moses permits, as Jesus explains, that a man, if he finds some uncleanness in his wife, could give her a certificate of divorce and put her away. After they got married, he found an uncleanness in her. Okay, so they already knew the answer to that question in regards to what did Moses command. What else do we see here regarding the question that they ask and what Moses commanded? How does Jesus describe this? Okay. In what way? And how does he describe this command? Was it a command that Moses is giving? It was Deuteronomy 24 in verse 1. Is that a command to put your wife away if you find an uncleanness in her? Okay. Right. Right. So,
command?
No. How does Jesus describe this, Andrew?
I was going to...
Okay, sure.
And then I'll get back to it. But as Greg was saying, I mean, this really has nothing to do with the reason you could divorce your wife. It's an if statement. If he happens to divorce his wife and these things happen, then this is how you should deal with it. And there are many other examples in the old law of if this thing happens, this is how you should deal with it. And it's not saying it's okay if these things happen, it's just how you deal with it when they do happen.
Okay.
So it's an assumption here that people are going to divorce, which I think is what Jesus is getting at. He permitted you to do this because of the hardness of your heart, because he knew that you, that this was going to happen, and it's the steps that you should take when this does happen in order to proceed as God.
Okay. Any other thoughts on that? Could everybody hear what Andrew was saying? No. trying to paraphrase it again. Well, what Andrew is saying is that the law was given because, as Jesus, how did Jesus describe? Why was the law given? Why was the permission given? Why did Moses permit to give a certificate of divorce? Because of the hardness of their hearts. Because he knew that there were going to be situations that they were going to be faced with where one party would break the covenant of the other party in a marriage, and then how to deal with that from that point on. But what we're going to see in just a few minutes, we're going to look into this a little bit more. What was God's design from the very beginning trumps all of that. But the reason that Moses gave this permission in the law for how to handle the situation of sexual immorality within a marriage, he gave the permission to give your spouse a certificate of divorce. Does that make sense? Did I word that as carefully as I try? And I try to be as careful in my wording of that as possible. Does it indicate sexual immorality?
Well, that was the debate.
That was the debate
that they were having at this time. That was, there was a discussion among the different parties, among Jews, what that word meant. And they were trying to get Jesus to take a side. What he did was, he didn't take a side. He refused to take a side. Right. He said, that's not the point here. Mm-hmm. Which is, he's right, it's not the point.
Right. So the word uncleanness, no, I don't believe that that's specifically talking about sexual immorality and only sexual immorality. But Moses is, I think what, the only thing I pointed out with the word, using the word uncleanness, is that Moses' law wasn't a blanket, if you're unhappy at all with your wife, you can put her away. Now, I'm sure there was a party or people within the Jewish community that did take that position, that word uncleanness could be a very broad definition, and you could use that to divorce your wife or your husband for just any reason, but I don't believe that was his intention. But I'm not specifying that is dealing with only with sexual immorality, no.
So the point that Andrew was making, try to talk so loud, here, the point that he was making was that this is in Deuteronomy 24, is a long if-then statement, and it really has to, and I think Greg said this, it really has to do more with who can remarry and who can remarry whom than it has to do with what the conditions that cause a divorce are. Apparently, from what I can understand, there was a practice of the Jewish men, and first of all, the Jewish society was unique in that time in that they allowed a woman, they required that when a man divorced his wife, he give her a certificate of divorce so that she was allowed to marry another person. That wasn't common in those societies. So they put women on a higher level than most of the societies around them did. So she's got the right in their society to remarry. She's not permanently disgraced. But the point was that what some of these Jewish men were doing is they would want to have an affair with some woman, so they would divorce their wife, go have the affair with a woman, and then go back and remarry their wives. And he's saying, that's not, you can't do that. That's displeasing to God. He doesn't get to the point as to why it is, but it is displeasing to God. Jesus then comes along and tells him why it's displeasing to God, because it was never God's intention to allow divorce in the first place.
Okay. Any other thoughts, Casey?
Was it wasn't what God intended, but it, Moses trying to put some sort of order in how this place is supposed to just count out a few lands, which one.
Any other thoughts on the law as far as it pertains to Deuteronomy 24, kind of how the Pharisees may have been interpreting that or using that to trick Jesus? Again, I think the big picture is they're trying to test him, and they ask the question for any reason. And we know that it was not, the permission that Moses gave was not for any reason. Right? That's the main point I think we should take away from this account, is that the permission that was given by Moses was not just for any reason. It was never intended to be that way in the eyes of God. And also, it was given for the hardness of their hearts. Now, do we ever want to be in a situation where we're labeled by God as having a hard heart? Okay, so if we're being allowed to do something because of the hardness of our heart, I think that should give us pause for whether or not we should do it. Yes, sir. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So, in Jesus' answer to this, so they quote Deuteronomy 24. What scripture does Jesus quote in his answer to the Pharisees then? Long before Deuteronomy 24. How far back? Let's go there. Genesis chapter 1. Really, Genesis chapter 2 is, it's a combo of the two verses, of course, is what he gives. So Genesis chapter 1. And verse 27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female. He created them. And then skip over to chapter 2 and verse 24. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And then, just to kind of round this out, let's go back to Matthew 19 and actually let's go back one book of the Bible, back to Malachi chapter 2. Malachi chapter 2 and verse 16. For the Lord God of Israel says that he hates divorce, for it covers one's garment with violence. Okay, so back to Matthew 19. So what is the answer that Jesus gives? What is Jesus' clarification, commandment, however you want to describe this here? What does he say about marriage? What is involved? Okay, so even back, let's go back one step. What does it involve? Like this, let's get the description, the details. Let's get everything about a marriage. What does a marriage involve? Okay.
Man and a woman.
I'm sorry, you have to speak up. Leaving. Can we leave? We'll put that over. Leave and cleave. Okay. Is that referring to Jesus saying they should leave the father and mother, cleave to the wife, to the spouse? Okay. So what else?
Two equals one.
Drive the mathematicians crazy.
The big distinction is that God is involved. Mm-hmm. This isn't like a cell phone contract where, you know, 6 months in, you decide you want to become to. Right. It's a covenant made between the wife and husband and God. And God sealed that covenant, each one of them together, which is a repeated thing throughout the Old Testament. Proverbs 2, he says, about those who forsake the companion of their youth and between each other and God. And so that's the huge thing. You're treating it like it's just a contract. Mm-hmm. You can change your mind with one. More than a contract.
God's authority governs your religion.
I think this is kind of here. I'll just kind of do this.
Anything else? A couple more things. What else did Jesus say about marriage? Specifically marriage. We'll deal with divorce in a second. Let's do marriage now. We'll get to the divorce part in a second. Anything else that I'm missing here, or that we need to clarify or add? What you want to add? Right. So that's the marriage part. Unless anybody has anything else, he goes all the way back to the beginning to answer this. All the way back to the very beginning in Genesis, when man was created, male and female, to answer their question. He doesn't go back to the law. He doesn't go back to the prophets. He goes all the way back to the very, very beginning, how it was originally intended and designed. Yes, sir?
The other thing, you said, fruitful and multiply.
Okay. Yeah, that was included in Genesis there. All right, so now let's get to divorce. Because that's what they're trying to get him on, right? It's not who can be married or why can we be married. They're really trying to catch him on, why can we get a divorce? That's the answer they want to know. They want to see if they can trap him on. So what does Jesus say about divorce? First of all, let's remind ourselves again. What was said in Malachi 2:16? How does God feel about divorce? Hates divorce. I know that some of the language there, he's talking about the covenant relationship between Judah and Israel and him. And so that language is used to symbolize that in some ways. But it also does have an actual meaning for them actually divorcing their wives in that time. So there was kind of a double meaning there. So we could apply it to a man and a woman getting divorced, I believe. So he hates divorce. So what does Jesus say about divorce here?
God has joined that no man separate.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. No man
separate. All right, so God is joining together. No man can separate. No man should separate. Let no man separate the two that he has joined to become one flesh. They are now in a covenant. That's how he describes this. How else? What else does it say about divorce?
Well, from the beginning, divorce was never
part of intention. Yep. Divorce is not intended. I hope that's not too small. So is divorce wrong in all situations? Is that what Jesus says here? I know these are touchy subjects, but I believe we should try to gain some as much clarification out of this passage as we can.
In all situations, when a divorce results, someone has sinned.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Maybe two someones, but at least one.
Yes, and if you couldn't hear Tom, if a divorce has happened, somebody has sinned. At least one party has sinned. At least two parties have sinned, and three, four, more than that could be sinning in that situation. I believe we also see that in Malachi 2:16, that it covers one's blood, or it covers one's garments with violence. Okay, that's how he described violence. So what else? What else is said about divorce? I'm sorry, sir. No adultery.
So wait, can you clarify
exactly what you're saying there?
Well, you asked the question. Is this a blanket statement that you can divorce your any reason? No, mm-hmm. being said.
Okay.
All right, so we're going to put that here. All right.
And that's interesting. That's in Matthew 19.
Right, let's look at that. Let's look at Mark chapter 10. As far as in his answer to the Pharisees, is what Greg's talking about. He does not include that in his answer to them. He only describes what God has created. Then if you notice in verse 10, in the house, his disciples also asked him again about the same matter. And he said to them, whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her. And if a woman divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery. So he just takes it a little bit further, but he never gives an exception or a validation for a divorce in Mark chapter 10. That is interesting. That's also an interesting difference between the two accounts. So does he give an exception other than adultery in Matthew chapter 19? He doesn't give any exception in Mark chapter 10. But does he give any other exception in Matthew 19? And just so we're clear, in Matthew 19, let's look back there and just read the verse that's being referred to there. That's verse 9 is where this exception is given. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. And whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery. So are there any other exceptions given for breaking this covenant that God, from the very beginning, intended to be man and woman joined together, becoming one flesh, and staying committed to one another? Is there any other exception given? No. Any other comments? Anything else you guys want to add to this? Yes, Wade. Jesus' teachings here apply to?
All the children of Adam and Eve.
So all the children of Adam and Eve is Tom's answer. Does anybody want to challenge that answer? And why would you say so, Tom? What was Jesus' answer for in the very first answer he gives?
Go back to the beginning.
To go back to the beginning, okay? And that's why I would agree with Tom 100%. All the children of Adam and Eve fall under this teaching because Jesus goes all the way back to that teaching to give the answer. And that's kind of, I would agree with him on that. Bill?
Well, Moses wrote the book of Genesis.
Okay.
The book of Genesis can't be separated from the law. And Jesus was speaking to people in covenant relationship with Moses. Now, certainly he makes clear by referencing the account of Genesis 22 that God created man and woman with the intent of them being together in marriage
I tried to be very careful how I worded that. It's not speaking to and who does it apply to. I hope that was clear, that who does this teaching apply to, not as who's he speaking to. I think those are...
Well, I understand. I don't think that you can separate those two from the standpoint of the key point that he's speaking to people who are in covenant relationship with God.
Okay.
Now, of course, this isn't the only passage teaching precepts.
Right.
Whether in the Old Testament or the New Testament.
Okay. Right, Tom.
So, there are cases in the Gospels. The Gospels are, at least the Synoptic Gospels, are parallel accounts. There are cases where we can't be sure that what is being said in one is actually parallel with what's
right.
being said in another, exactly the same. However, if you read Matthew 19 and you read Mark 10 this past week, you notice that there are very close parallels, at least in the first part of the two chapters,
mm-hmm.
which leads me to think that these two accounts are the second.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, we've all read stuff, marriage and divorce, we've all read lots of stuff. And people make an attempt to do very fine distinctions between what was said here and what was said there mm-hmm. and what applies. That doesn't seem to be a wise approach, given that in what Jesus, you were talking about, did Jesus ask what Moses said or did they ask what Moses said? Well, it doesn't make any difference. Okay, it doesn't make any difference. And what I would suggest that we have to focus on here is Jesus' teaching. This is really about my super script over this says teaching about divorce. No, it's not. It's teaching about marriage, and that's where we really need to put the focus.
Yeah.
If there's a divorce and we have to worry about, well, does this person have a right to remarry or not? We've already lost.
Mm-hmm.
We've already lost.
Yep. Absolutely, because. As has been said many times already by others, I know I've said it, is that divorce has been the result of covering one's garments with violence. Okay, sin has been committed. It's not to be taken lightly. It's not to we're not hoping for a reason to get out of a marriage. We're trying to keep two people who have been joined together as one flesh together. That is the point, and I agree with Tom that the passage is focusing on marriage and its design and what it was to be and the relationship that God intended, and that is a serious covenant that we should take serious. What does it compare to in both the Old Testament and in the New Testament? Paul compares marriage to something, and then also, as we read in, I believe what we see in Malachi and some other prophecies, what is marriage compared to in the Old Testament? First of all, the Old Testament, what is it compared to? God and Israel. Okay, so he compares that to a relationship between himself and his people. Okay, in the Old Testament.
I know you guys aren't going to be able to read that, so we'll write it anyway.
It'll make you feel better.
Exactly. I feel like I'm actually teaching if I'm writing, right?
Okay. And then in the New Testament, what does it compare to? God and his people, who are the church. Okay? So is it a covenant? Is it a relationship that God takes seriously? Yes, and we should take that very seriously from our side as well. Yes.
Just one other point too. I think that divorce is no less important to God among the Gentiles than it was among Jews. So I think the teachings there that you see in the Old Testament and that Christ is alluding to there, while sure he was speaking to Jews and to those who were in that covenant relationship, that didn't absolve the Gentiles. Just divorce or marriage.
I would agree with that as well, is that his view of marriage from the beginning was to be between man and woman, and was not to be separated. It was to be there for them to become one flesh, that could not be separated. Anything else that we should address here? I hate to start a new subject with just a couple minutes left. Casey and then Tom.
Think about that whole conversation. It seems like the Pharisees are saying, yeah, but the precedent is already set by Moses under these conditions. And little do they know, or maybe they do know, the prophet was the person who put that law in place. He said, as the judge put this in place, let me tell you what the real precedent is. The precedent was set in Genesis. And this has always been in place. But it also points out sort of that, the completeness of the New Testament versus the Old Testament. So Jesus is the judge, come back and say, this is what was intended. So let's get back to what was intended.
Tom.
And just to point out, it should be obvious to us. When he points them back to Genesis, when quotes what was said there, what has just happened is that God has created a woman from the man. And so they were both one body. Now they're two individuals. And the intent of the relationship is to bring them back together as though they were one body, which is what Adam says in his prophetic quote there that Jesus quotes. So we have to think about two people who are married as though they were starting out as they were trying to get back to what they started out as, one body. Mm-hmm. That's God's intent.
And so I guess to kind of close this out, if that was the intention that God had from the beginning, was for a marriage to work in a certain way in Genesis, and everything along the way that's been used to clarify certain situations is only because a sin has occurred, and now we got to clean it up, or we got to help the situation, or someone's garments have been covered in violence. So Moses is given that permitting there in Deuteronomy to clean up a messy situation that man has created through sin or through some thing that God never intended for it to be. And then some of the teachings that we see from Paul is to clean up situations where people are not acting and holding to covenants in the way that God intended. And I think if we can look at that as the big picture first, then it helps to guide us, you know, through our decision making when we choose a spouse and we choose to enter that relationship, and then how serious we should take that relationship from there on, that it's for life. And that it ultimately, the only reason the covenant should be broken is through death, through physical death of one or both of the parties. And that anything else other than that is not a good situation and not as God intended, and there will be consequences for that happening. So thank you very much for your discussion. I really appreciate it.